A job for me? Yes, sit down while I explain. Fletch, I don't need a story from you. I can get my own story. Amusing lad though you are, I sort of resent the idea I need to get a story from you or from anyone else. You're talking like a woman. You noticed. Why are you talking like a woman? Because you're talking like a man? You come bounding in here, offering to give me a story, arrange a job for me as if I were someone who has to be taken care of, as if you, the big he, are the source of the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. Golly, you speak well, Fletch said. You just make that up? Just occasionally, Fletch, you have problems with male chauvinism. I've mentioned it to you. Yes, you have. I know you try hard to correct yourself and better yourself, but, Fletch, darling, remember there can be no end to the self-improvement bit. Thank you. Now, may we get on to the matter at hand? No.
No?
No, I'm not accepting a story from you. I'm not accepting a job from you. I wouldn't even accept dinner from you.
What?
Well, maybe I'd accept dinner. After his ride into the hills to find Joseph Molinaro and his long walk back, Fletch was feeling distinctly chilled by Crystal's air conditioner. Crystal, do you think this is the way Bob McConnell would respond to such an offer from me?
No.
Stuart Poynton?
Of course not.
Tim Shields?
They're not women.
They're also not friends. He popped his eyes at her. She looked away. Neither of them had sat down. He said, "Do you mind if I turn down your air conditioning?"
"Go ahead."
"Can a man and woman be friends?" he asked. He found the air conditioner controls. They had been set to high. He turned them to low. "Are friends people who consider each other?" he asked. She said, "I can get my own story." "Do you know Lydia March killed herself?" he asked.
"No."
"Do you know she killed her husband?"
"No."
"Do you know that the shooting this afternoon was not an unsuccessful attempt on the life of the Vice President, but a successful attempt on the life of Walter March, Jr.?"
"No."
"Do you know who killed Walter March, Jr.?"
"No, but I can find out. Why are you telling me all this?"
"You can't find out in time to scoop everyone else and get a job with Jack Saunders on the Boston Star." "If you know all this, why don't you use it? You haven't got a job either." "I'm working on a book, Crystal, in Italy, on Edgar Arthur Tharp, Jr."
"Oh, yeah."
She fiddled around the room, continuing to look unwell. "You don't have to give me anything." "Crystal, I have to get on a plane in a couple of hours. I can't afford to miss it. I can't do the follow-ups on this story. Now, will you sit down?"
"Is all this true?" she asked. "What you just said? Did Lydia March kill herself?"
"Cross my heart and hope to die in a cellar full of Walter March's private detectives. Will you listen, please?" She sat in a light chair. At first, clearly, part of her mind was still on the terrace, kneeling over Walter March's son, trying to breathe life into him. Clearly, another part of her mind was still wondering why Fletch was insisting on giving her the biggest story of the year, of her career.
"You're not listening," Fletch said. "Please. You've got to be able to phone this story in pretty soon."
Gradually, as her attention focused on what he was saying, her eyes widened, color came back to her cheeks, her back straightened. Then she began saying, "Fletch, you can't know this."
"I'm giving you much more background than you need, just so you'll believe me."
"But there is no way you can know all this. It's not humanly possible."
"Not all my methods are human," he said.
And she would say, "Fletch, are you sure?" And she would repeat,
"Fletch, how do you know all this?"
"I have a marvelous machine."
Finally, as the pieces fitted together, she became convinced.
"Hell of a story," she said.
Despite her initial resistance and inattention, Fletch saw there was no reason to repeat any part of the story to Crystal. She said, "Wow." Fletch picked up the telephone and put the call through.
"Who's calling?"
a grumpy male voice finally asked.
"I am Fletcher."
"Who?"
"Just tell Jack Saunders a guy named Fletcher wants to talk to him."
Immediately, Jack Saunders' voice came on the line.
"I was hoping you'd call," he said.
"How do, Jack? Remember telling me you'd give a job to anyone who scooped the Walter March story?"
"Did I say that?"
"You did."
"Fletch, I said, remember Crystal Fione? She used to work with us in Chicago."
I remember she's even fatter than my wife. Hell of a lot brighter, though.
Jack, she has the story.
What story?
The Walter March story, the whole thing, tied in a neat big bundle.
Last time we talked, you listed her as a suspect in the Walter March murder.
I just wanted to bring up her name, jog your memory, let you know she's here at the convention.
Crystal has the Walter March story?
Crystal has the job?
There was only the slightest hesitation. Crystal has the job.
Fletch said, Crystal has the Walter March story.
Let me talk to her a minute, Jack Saunders said, before I ask her to dictate into the recorder.
Sure, Jack, sure.
Crystal came to the phone.
Hello, Jack. How's Daphne?
Crystal listened a moment while doubtlessly Jack Saunders said something imaginative and rotten about his wife, and she laughed and shook her head at Fletch.
Say, Jack, you'd better slip me on the payroll pretty quick. My savings are about gone. This has been an expensive convention. Too much to eat around here.
Fletch put the air conditioner dial back on medium. Crystal would be on the phone a long time, and it would be hot work.
Sure, Jack, Crystal said. I'm ready to dictate. Switch me over to the recorder. I'll see you in Boston Monday.
Fletch opened the door.
Oh, boy!
Crystal, waiting for the star to straighten out its electronics, cupped her hand over the telephone receiver.
Scoopin' Freddy!
Absently, Fletch said, What?
Scoopin' the story will put me right up there in the big league with Freddy Arbuthnot.
Who?
Freddy Arbuthnot, Crystal said conversationally. Don't you read her stuff? She's terrific.
What?
Didn't you read her on the Pawcutchet trial in Arizona? Real award-winning stuff. She's the greatest.
Oh, yeah, you were in Italy.
You mean Freddy...
Crystal, round-eyed, looked at him from the telephone.
Fletch said, You mean Freddy is... What's the matter, Fletch? You mean Freddy Arbuthnot is...
What?
You mean Freddy Arbuthnot is... Freddy Arbuthnot?
Who did you think she is? Crystal asked.
Paul McCartney?
Oh, my God. Verily, Fletch did smite his forehead.
I never looked her up.
As he began to stagger through the door, Crystal said, Hey, Fletch. He looked at her dumbly. Crystal said, Thanks, friend. Chapter 37 Nice of you to drop by. Having spent a moment banging on Freddy Arbuthnot's door, Fletch scarcely noticed the door to his own room was open. Freddy must have left for the airport. Robert Engelhart and Don Gibbs were in Fletch's room. Gibbs was looking into Fletch's closet. Engelhart had opened the marvelous machine on the luggage rack and was examining it.
I don't have much time to visit, Fletch said. Gotta pack and get to the airport.
Pretty classy machine, Engelhart said. Did you use it well?
All depends on what you mean by well.
Where are the tapes?
Oh, they're gone.
Engelhart turned to him.
Gone? Don, as long as you're in the closet, will you drag my suitcases out?
Gone, Engelhart said.
Yeah, gonzo.
Fletch took the two suitcases from Gibbs and opened them on the bed.
Hand me that suit from the closet, will you, Don?
Engelhart said, Mr. Fletcher, you're suffering from a misapprehension.
I'm sure it's nothing aspirin and a good night's sleep can't fix. What about those slacks, Don?
Thanks. Those men, in Italy, Fabens and Eggers.
Eggers Gordon and Fabens Richard, helped Fletch.
They aren't ours.
No?
No.
Through his horn-rimmed glasses, Engelhart's eyes were as solemn as a hoot owl's.
Fletch said, Gee, not ours.
They are not members of the Central Intelligence Agency. They don't work for any American agency. They are not citizens of the United States.
Anything in that laundry bag, Don?
Mr. Fletcher, you're not listening.
Eggers, Gordon, and Fabens Richard are baddies, said Fletch. I'll bet they're from the other side of the steel shade.
Engelhart said, Which is why Mr. Gibbs and I came down here to Hendricks. Foreign agents had set you up to provide them with information to blackmail the American press.
Fletch said, Gee.
Engelhart said, I don't see how you could think the Central Intelligence Agency could ever be involved in such an operation.
I checked, said Fletch. I asked you.
We never said we were involved. Engelhart said. I said you'd better go along with the operation, and then Gibbs and I came down here to figure it out.
And did you figure it out? Fletch asked.
We've been working very hard, Engelhart said.
Fletch said, yeah.
He took off his shirt and stuffed it into the laundry bag. After riding and walking around the countryside, he needed a shower, but he didn't have time. Engelhart was saying, I don't see how anyone could think the CIA would be involved in such an operation.
In the bathroom, Fletch sprayed himself with underarm deodorant.
Don Gibbs said, Fletch, did you know those guys weren't from the CIA?
I had an inkling.
You did?
I inkled.
How?
Fabens' cigar. It really stank. Had to be Romanian, Albanian, Bulgarian. Phew, it stank. I mentioned it to him. American clothes, American accent. People get really stuck with their smoking habits.
Fletch lifted clean shirts from the bureau drawer to his suitcase.
Then when the Internal Revenue Service wallet paid me a visit, I figured there were either crossed wires or no wires at all. There was no good reason for putting that kind of pressure on me at that moment.
He was putting on a clean shirt. Sternly, Engelhart said,
If you knew or suspected Eggers and Fabens weren't from the CIA, then why did you give them the tapes?
Oh, I didn't, Fletch said.
You said they're gone.
The tapes? They are gone.
You didn't give them to Eggers and Fabens? Gibbs asked.
You think I'm crazy?
Fletcher, Engelhart said, we want Eggers and Fabens, and we want those tapes.
Eggers and Fabens you can have.
Fletch took their telegram from the drawer of his bedside table and handed it to Engelhart.
Says here you can pick them up tonight at BOAC counter in Washington, any time between 7:30 and 9. Very convenient for you.
Fletch grabbed a necktie he had already put in one suitcase.
Also indicates, if you read carefully, that I have not given them the tapes.
Engelhart was holding the telegram, but looking at Fletch.
Fletcher, where are the tapes?
I mailed them yesterday.
To yourself?
No.
To whom did you mail them?
Fletch checked his suitcases. He had already thrown in his shaving gear. I guess that's everything, he said.
Fletcher, Engelhart said, you're going to give us those tapes.
I thought you said the CIA wouldn't be involved in a thing like this.
As long as the tapes exist, Gibbs said. The tapes are evidence of information gathered by a foreign power, Engelhart announced.
Bourgeois, said Fletch.
He closed his suitcases.
Fletcher, do I have to remind you how you were forced to do this job in the first place? Exporting money illegally from the United States, not being able to state the source of that money, not filing federal tax returns?
Are you blackmailing me?
It will be my duty, Engelhart said, to turn this information over to the proper domestic authorities.
You know, Gibbs giggled, we didn't know any of that about you until you told us. You're blackmailing me, Fletch said.
Gibbs was standing behind him, and Engelhart was standing near the door.
There's a tape on the machine, Fletch said. Actually, it's a copy of a tape. The original was mailed out with the others.
Engelhart looked at the tape on the machine.
Press the play button, Fletch said.
Engelhart hesitated a moment, apparently wondering what pressing the play button might do to him, then bravely stepped to the machine and pressed the button. The volume was loud. They heard Gibbs's voice.
Snow, beautiful snow. Who'd ever expect snow in Virginia this time of year? Who'd ever think my dear old department heady, Bobby Engelhart, would travel through the South with snow in his attaché case? Good thing it didn't melt. Well, I've got a surprise for you too, dear old department heady. What's that, you ask with one voice? Well, I've got a surprise for you. Remember those two sweet little things in Billy Bobby's boo-boo bar lounge? Sweet little things, you'd say together. Well, sir, I had the perspicacity to invite them up to our glorious journalist's suite. This very night, this very hour, this very minute. In fact, for 20 minutes ago.
Engelhart's voice.
You did?
Gibbs's voice.
I did. Where the hell are they? Gotta live like journalists, right? Wild, wicked women, live it up.
Engelhart's voice.
I invited someone, too.
Gibbs's voice.
You did? We're gonna have four broads, four naked, writhing girls all in the same room?
Engelhart's voice.
The lifeguard.
Engelhart turned off the marvelous machine.
The tape continues, Fletch said, all through what I'm sure your superiors will provincially refer to as your drunken sex orgy. Lots more references to cocaine, etc.
Switch!
he quoted Gibbs, but with a drawl. Switch!
Engelhart's shoulders had lowered like those of a bull about to charge. His fists were clenched. The skin around his eyes was a dark red.
Live like journalists, Fletch quoted. Disgusting!
Gibbs was assimilating more slowly, or he was in a state of complete shock. His face had gone perfectly white, his jaw slack. Standing, he was staring at the floor about 2 meters in front of him.
Of course, this isn't the original tape, Fletch said, but the original isn't much better. Same cast of characters, same dialogue.
Gibbs said, you bugged our room. God damn it, Fletcher, you bugged our room.
Of course, you think I'm stupid?
Engelhart's shoulders had slumped somewhat, his fists loosened.
What are you going to do? He asked.
Blackmail you, Fletch answered. Of course. He picked up his two suitcases. 6 weeks from today, I want to receive official formal notification that all charges against me have been dropped, Fletch said, into the Potomac. If not, the careers of Robert Engelhart and Donald Gibbs will be over.
We can't do that, said Engelhart.
That's abuse of agency, said Gibbs.
Fletch said, you'll find a way.
The airport limousine had gone, so Fletch had to send for a taxi. He was waiting in front of the hotel with his suitcases. Don Gibbs came through the glass door of the hotel toward him, still looking extremely white.
Fletcher. His voice was low.
Yeah?
The taxi was arriving.
If you had any suspicion at all Eggers and Fabens weren't from the CIA, why did you go through with this job?
3 reasons.
Fletch handed his suitcases to the driver.
First, I'm nosy.
Fletch opened the door to the back seat.
Second, I thought there might be a story in it.
He got into the car.
Third, Fletch said, just before closing the door, I didn't want to go to jail.
Chapter 38, the last chapter.
Freddy!
Her carry-on bag in hand, she was almost at the steps of the 12-seater airplane.
Freddy!
His own suitcases banging against his knees, he ran across the airplane parking area.
Freddy!
Finally, she heard him and turned to wait for him.
Listen, he said.
Standing before her, he was huffing and puffing.
Listen, he said. You're Freddy Arbuthnot.
No, she said, I'm Ms. Blake.
I can explain, he said.
In the late afternoon light, her eyes examined him through narrow slits.
Ah,
he said. She waited. He said, and she waited.
I mean, I can explain, he said. There is an explanation.
The pilot, in a short-sleeved shirt and sunglasses, was waiting by the steps for them to board.
Fletch said, this will take some time.
We don't have any more time, she said, together.
We do, he said. All you have to do is come to Italy with me, tonight.
Irwin, Fletcher, I have a job to do. I'm employed, you know.
A vacation? You could have a nice vacation. Kanya's beautiful this time of year.
If I had the time, I'd stay here and polish up the Walter March story.
Polish it up?
So far, I've only been able to phone in the leaders.
Leaders?
What leaders do you have?
Oh, you know, Lydia March's suicide, her confession note, Junior's murder, Joseph Molinaro.
Oh, he said. Ow. As if thinking aloud, she said, I'll have to do the polishing in New York before Saturday morning.
Then you could come to Italy, he said, Saturday.
She said, you know the Jack Burroughs trial starts Monday.
Jack Burroughs?
Fletcher, you know I won the Mulholland Award for my coverage of the Burroughs case last year.
Oh, yes, he said.
No, actually, I didn't.
Fletcher, are you a journalist at all?
Off and on, he said, off and on.
I think you're a busboy, she said quietly. Except busboys have to get along well with everybody.
5 heads aboard the plane were looking at them through the windows.
I have to be in Italy, he said, for about 6 weeks, or I should say I have to be out of this country for 6 weeks, more or less.
Have a nice time.
Freddy.
Irwin.
There has to be some way I can explain, he said.
She agreed.
There has to be.
It's sort of difficult. Her eyes were still squinted against the sun. In fact, I think it's sort of impossible to explain. Freddie Arbuthnot's chin-up smile was nice. She said, "Buzz off, Fletch." There were only two empty seats remaining aboard the plane, one in front, next to Sheldon Levy, which Freddie took, and one in back, next to Leona Hatch, which Fletch got. Leona Hatch watched him closely while he took off his coat, sat down, and buckled his seatbelt.
"I'll swear I've met you before," Leona Hatch said. "Somewhere."
5 rows in front of him, Freddie's golden head was already buried in a copy of Newsworld magazine. Leona Hatch continued to stare at him.
"What's your name?"
"Fletch."
"What's your full name?"
"Fletcher."
"What's your first name?"
"Irwin."
"What?"
"Irwin. Irwin Fletcher. People call me Fletch."
This concludes the reading of Fletch's Fortune by Gregory MacDonald. This book was read by Grover Gardner. Additional titles by Gregory MacDonald in the Books on Tape library include Fletch and the Widow Bradley and Confess Fletch. For additional information about them or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material. Will you please wind or rewind the tape as appropriate so the book will be in order for the next person to enjoy? Thank you.